You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to Watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, in these times, you know we're facing lots of uncertainty. Are we heading for a recession? Are we heading for a global financial meltdown? Is the dollar going to blow up? Will there be a new reserve currency? What about crypto? All of these things. Well, what we're talking about here is a new book that you need to get called The Uncertainty Solution: How to Invest with Confidence in the Face of the Unknown. I guess the author is John M. Jennings. He's with us now. John, you're always, to some extent, investing in the face of uncertainty. It's just that the brain, I guess, our human condition is we look for normalcy, and therefore we've got this thing called normalcy bias. But in times like today, there is no such thing as normalcy bias because nothing is normal anymore. So you got to have an approach, a discipline. How do you invest in uncertain times?
Yeah. But I mean, you're exactly right. It's always uncertain. I mean, there's this old adage that says now is the hardest time to invest, whenever your now is, right? So when things are going gangbusters in the economy and the stock market, people are worried about, am I investing when things are too high, things are too good, when things are bad, are they going to continue to get bad? And then you have uncertainty. You have, Russia and Ukraine, other geopolitical issues. You have, the leftover effects of the pandemic. You have inflation. We had our, hopefully, banking crisis in the rearview mirror, but who knows? So yeah, tons of uncertainty right now. But to your point, that's always the case. And it's hard to find what normal is. In terms of uncertainty, the reason why we hate uncertainty so much as a species is because we've evolved to be pattern recognizing machines, right? And the reason this is the case is if you can detect a pattern, it gave us historically back in the day a survival advantage, right? Because a pattern will tell you what's going to happen in the future if it's a persistent pattern. This is a huge survival advantage. Is that rustle in the bushes? Does it pretend predator or prey? What is the migration patterns of my own prey? Weather patterns, are those berries nutritious or poisonous? All these things gave us a survival advantage. And so what happens is when we cannot recognize a pattern, we get anxious, we get worried, it actually triggers our fight or flight response, and we get all keyed up. And we may not even realize it's happening because of uncertainty. Then when we resolve the uncertainty, the opposite reaction happens, or the calming effect happens, we actually get a dose of dopamine, it feels good. So it leaves us with the following, dichotomy. We don't like uncertainty and we want to resolve it. But when we resolve it, it feels good. So we're constantly looking to feel good. So it's part of the reason why some people like to gamble, right? You create uncertainty, then you have that dose of dopamine that comes when it's resolved. It's why we don't like to know the endings necessarily of sporting events or books or movies, right? Because we want to have that bit of uncertainty that's non-threatening that we get to resolve. So it's pretty complex, but the main takeaway is we don't like when we can't recognize a pattern, which is really the definition of uncertainty.
Okay. So basically, we've evolved, we're modern man, but all of the vestigial, all of the evolutionary things that got us here are the things that are tripping you up now. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. We are modern, our ancient brains living in a modern world, right? Yes. So they're constantly triggered by non-threatening patterns. In the grand scheme of things like, the stock market and the economy and things, I mean, they matter, but it's not being threatened like being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah. We're being chased by a saber-toothed central bank, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So how do you avoid the saber tooth of the central bank?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure we can. I mean, that gets to more, you know, tactical investing answers. Really the thing to do when faced with uncertainty, there's a few things to do. So instead of doing what we usually do, which is to get keyed up, and what we do is we grasp the first explanation we can find that explains this supposed pattern we're seeing or the lack of pattern. We grasp the first explanation and we defend it. We turn to experts for predictions of the future, right? So like if I were to say right now, what's going to happen with monetary policy and what's going to happen with interest rates? Like your listeners would be like, oh, that's great. Like you would feel this sense of calmness or pleasure by having somebody, and I could give all sorts of data and reasons why I was giving my opinion. But you know, what study after study has shown, and you probably experience this in reality, is experts, whether they're economists or investment managers or even political experts, are atrocious at predicting what's going to happen in the future. So really, it's really hard, but turning off those expert opinions of what's going to happen in the future is so important to successful investing. Like a lot of people think, well, you need to know what's going to happen in the future to invest well. And actually, the opposite is true. Because if you start with, you can't know, therefore thinking you know doesn't make you make better decisions. Acknowledging your ignorance about the future and others allows you to invest in a way that gives you a margin of safety or a moat. And you know, if anything, you can say, okay, well, what happens if, you know, inflation continues to run high? What happens if it comes back to a reasonable level? And then maybe what happens if we actually tip into deflation? There's some people that think that over the next 18 months, deflation is as big of a risk as, you know, continuing high inflation. And you structure your investments thinking, I don't know. Here's a range of potential outcomes. How am I going to, how am I going to weight these things? How am I going to invest based on that? So, you know, we find that that's really a good way to go, is turn off those expert opinions, because they're just not, you know, it's just not possibly correct. And like when you hear an expert give their views of what inflation is going to be or monetary policy, I mean, go back and say, what were they saying a year ago? Or what were they saying at kind of the, you know, going into 2022? Did they say that they thought that inflation was going to spike to, you know, what was it, 8.7%? You know, did they predict that the Ukraine war would happen? And if so, you know, 14 months later, whatever it is, it'd still be going on? I mean, no, of course not. So why listen to them now?
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of what Peter Lynch said, taking a walk down Main Street instead of Wall Street. And he always said, yes, the dumb money isn't dumb until it listens to the smart money.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And to your point, you get a lot of people, you know, talking their book, you know. So, and I don't mean like their book that they've written, but their book of investments, right? So, yeah, so it's really hard to set that aside. And really the premise of my book, in addition to, you know, here's how we usually respond to uncertainty and we hate it, is what to do instead is acknowledge that you're feeling uncertain. So that's really, you know, a skill that you can develop. Say, I'm going to sit in my discomfort. So I'm going to accept it. I'm going to say, I'm just going to feel uncertain. And then what my book mainly hits on are 35 mental models. So a mental model is a model that you keep in your head about how the world works. And you want to develop mental models that are actually based in reality, right? And to create, and what Charlie Munger, you know, Warren Buffett's business partner says, who's the champion of this concept, is you need 80 or 90 of them that will carry most of the freight in making you what he calls a worldly wise person. And you know which ones to pull out when. So you create this lattice work of mental models. So I'll tell you, one of the key, you know, investment mental models I discuss in my book is one that's called the stock market is not the economy. Mm-hmm. And what it really boils down to is this, is that the stock market moves in advance of what the economy is going to do. It's not vice versa. So what happens a lot of times with investors, if they look at things like, okay, we're maybe entering a recession, or unemployment's going to go up, or, you know, this is what's going to happen with inflation or other economic metrics, GDP growth. They look at those sort of things and then say, I'm going to use that to inform my investment decisions. When the opposite is true, the stock market, it doesn't always get it right. It's Paul Samuelson quipped that the stock market has predicted 9 of the last 5 recessions, right? But the stock market doesn't always predict it well, but it moves in advance of what the economy does.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't use the economy to inform your investment decisions. And that is incredibly freeing as an investor. It can take away a lot of the worry and the uncertainty about what's going to happen in the economy, because even if you knew, it wouldn't tell you when you should invest. And an example of when we used this recently was in, you know, March of 2020. So when COVID was hitting, we'd have clients that were very concerned, understandably, about COVID. So this pandemic's going to be, you know, sweeping the globe, sweeping the U.S. You know, what should we do? And we're like, well, we know a few things. Like, as things, as entire industry shut down, as the economy slows, and you remember that that chart, either the Wall Street Journal and New York Times, that showed unemployment claims, you know, they usually run around 200,000 that jumped to, like, I don't know, like 4 million or something in a week. It was just mind-boggling. But we use that investment mental model with our clients to say, the economy does not predict the stock market. Therefore, we should not make investment changes based on what we think the economy is going to do. Because even if we knew, and we do know some things, it's going to get worse, it doesn't tell you what the stock market is going to do. So we actually had a lot of clients that rebalanced from bonds into stocks in March. And then, you know, the stock market rebounded way in advance of things getting better. We saw that in 08, 09. You know, it happens time and time and time again. And so that's an example of, like, one of the mental models of the book. And you can see how, like, if you study this, if you internalize it as an investor, how it can really help you in the face of uncertainty. Because you say, we have all this uncertainty in the economy. And you can say, I don't need to know what the economy is going to do, because if I did know, it wouldn't tell me what the stock market's going to do, right? So that's just one of the, you know, the 35 mental models in my book.
Okay. I'll buy it. I've heard it said that when you're thinking of investing, you should not be looking at the news, because it's the cycles that determine the news, not the news that determines the cycles. Do you buy that?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Torque Resources is an exploration company establishing a portfolio of premier copper gold early stage projects in Chile. Torque's management and technical teams have a strong track record of raising capital, discovery, and monetization of exploration successes. The company's Margarita Copper Gold project is located within the prolific coastal Cordillera Belt in Chile, which hosts some of the world's largest and most profitable copper mines. The Margarita project possesses excellent discovery potential for a major copper discovery due to the strength of the alteration system, large-scale magnetic targets, and the presence of copper oxide mineralization. Drilling is anticipated to begin in Q3 of this year. Torque trades in Canada under TORQ and on the OTC under TRBMF. To learn more, go to torqueresources.com. That's torqueresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
I do. And it's interesting. I wrote an article, and I have a section in my book on you know, market cycles, because that's obviously some very important mental models around market cycles. And one of them that I know is, you know, Hyman Minsky, who was an economist that died in 1996. But he was
Minsky moment.
The Minsky moment. So the Minsky moment is a huge thing to know about. And, you know, really, I think the big takeaway from Minsky is it's the financial instability hypothesis. It's that sometimes recessions or market cycles are triggered by external shocks, like, you know, the pandemic, for instance, was an external shock, or the oil crisis back in the 70s was an external shock. But often the economy sows the seeds of its own destruction by actions that are taking, you know, by risk-seeking, you know, businesses and investors and things. And so really, if you step back, times of seeming stability end up being the riskiest time to invest. And the times of the greatest instability, because of the cycle, end up being the best times to invest, even though the opposite feels true, right? So the thing to keep in mind with the you know, I'll call it the Minsky cycle, is financial instability hypothesis, is, you know, you'll see things that are happening in the economy where people are taking on, you know, more risk and, you know, risk. And we saw it with the banking system. So all these banks took on an incredible amount of interest rate risk by investing in, you know, treasury securities and, you know, with mismatched maturities with their deposits, you know, taking more and more risk that was uncompensated, right? So they were getting, you know, 1.5, 2% yields on these bonds, having their money locked up and not being compensated for it. And really what the Minsky cycle tells you is you start seeing those things, is that there will be a moment where it has a huge catalytic result. And we saw that with bank. And again, maybe we're through that with what the FDIC and the Fed and the Treasury have done, but we don't know what those actions will cause in the future, right? they put out this fire, but it's like suppressing forest fires. We found that that's not always a good idea, right? Because then you have bigger forest fires later. So that's just part of the uncertainty is, what were their actions to put out this fire the best thing to do in the long run, or was it more destructive? Will we have a bigger forest fire later? Time will tell. I don't know.
I don't either. I'm the first to admit it. My future telling predictions haven't always been that great. A lot of times I've been in sync, other times not. But clearly, when the pandemic occurred and they started throwing money at everybody and anybody, I knew that was going to be major inflationary, as bad as a war. And certainly it was.
Yeah.
And I acted accordingly. It was a great financial time for me personally, because I wasn't in a job. I wasn't in a business that was shut down by the government. Mm-hmm. But like you said, to some extent, we're reactive creatures. It's really hard, based on that biology, to, we're on the horizon looking for the saber-toothed tiger who's going to attack us, but we're not necessarily seeing what's behind us, who's creeping up from behind, and it might be a lion that's coming after us.
Right. That's exactly right. And again, I think, a key message in my book is that to be a successful investor, you don't need to predict the future well. And the reason is it's not possible to predict the future well. You're right sometimes, you're wrong the others. And it's about making good decisions in the face of uncertainty and knowing what to base those decisions on, to base them in lessons, wise lessons from reality, rather than based on emotion or some prediction that you've read. Yeah. And you can just look at the big investment banks, year to year. So for about a decade, I've kept track of the predictions that, the Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan's, Bank of America, all of them, make of, what's going to happen in the coming year in the markets. And it's completely laughable that they continue to make these predictions. Their predictions on GDP growth and what the stock market's going to do, growth versus value, international versus domestic, all these things are, worse than chance, basically, in how they end up turning out. And, when I have these situations where I'm at conferences or know people and, we'll end up having a drink or two at a bar, and I'll say to, some of these chief investment strategists at some of these other institutions, why do you continue to make these predictions when, you're really, they don't really add any value? If anything, they hurt. And the number one answer of the ones that are more, erudite, I would say, there are some of them like, oh no, I'm great. I'm like, really? But most of them say, it's really what the clients demand. Like my clients, or the clients of our firm want us to tell them what we think is going to happen. So we tell them, even though we're often wrong, we tell them. And as I detail, more, there's all these psychological reasons as humans. One of the main ones is overconfidence. Why we continue to make predictions or have strong opinions about things, even when we've been wrong over and over and over. One thing that I started doing, personally years ago, is keeping a decision journal. Mm-hmm. So when it comes time to make a decision, I will say, here's the issue, here are my possible, what I see as my possible decisions I could make. And then I go ahead and do it. And then I will go back, months and years later and look at, here's the decision I made. How did it turn out? And
right or wrong.
It's humbling.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be very humbling. Yogi Berra once said, prediction is very hard, especially about the future. And we got to accept turmoil, uncertainty, chaos. That is the norm, the new norm. It's not really that much different than the old norm.
Hey, is it?
John, if we want to find out more about you besides buying your book, which is the uncertainty solution, how to invest with confidence in the face of the unknown. How do we connect with you? Website,
Twitter? Yeah, so my website's pretty easy. It's John, M as in Jennings, or M as in Michael, sorry, then Jennings. So johnmjennings.com. Very simple. So it's my personal website, link to my book, more about me, link to my firm. So yeah, that's what we...
Excellent. All right. And if you have a question for John, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. There'll be a link to John's site in the show notes for this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Make sure you sign up for your free newsletter. John, very interesting, compelling, and we appreciate you coming on. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks for having me. It's a ton of fun.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.